Thank God for the return of the relationship with Qatar. Between us and Qatar, there are a lot of things. We have a political, economic, social, and geographical relationship. We also have relatives and blood with them. One is my aunt, God bless her. Her and her kids. We haven't seen them in 4 years, and thank God, today we reunite.
It is, on balance, a good thing that Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Egypt have agreed to call off their blockade and ostracization of Qatar after 3.5 debatably productive years. Far better for neighbours to be friends, etc. Those of us who appreciate an abstruse diplomatic furore, however, may be permitted a wistful sigh that this variance has been resolved short of what it might have been. Recall the heady days of late 2018, when Saudi umbrage with Qatar had reached such a heady pitch that Riyadh claimed to be seriously considering digging its border with Qatar into a canal and turning Qatar, therefore, from a peninsula into an island. By way of emphasising their dudgeon, Saudi Arabia said they also plan to situate along this new waterway a nuclear waste facility, so there. But the sketches presumably remain on some drawing board somewhere, and it is early days indeed for this new détente, so there's still hope. Before contemplating the reasons why all concerned have abandoned the standoff, a reminder is probably in order vis-à-vis why all concerned stood off in the first place. The pretext was Saudi Arabia's allegation that Qatar was supporting, fomenting, and/or encouraging jihadist terrorism. One might think that Saudi Arabia, of all countries making such an accusation, amounted to an audacious flinging of stones in the glasshouse, and one would be right, but that was never what it was really about. What it was really about was the belief of Saudi Arabia, and clearly many other Arab and/or Muslim nations, that Qatar was having far, far too many ideas of its own, especially about maintaining some sort of relationship with Iran, Saudi Arabia's great rival for regional influence. And many Arab countries had never entirely forgiven Qatar for the role they believed Qatar played in encouraging the Arab Spring 10 years ago via the clearly sinister means of funding a state-owned broadcaster, Al Jazeera, which did an outstanding job of reporting the Middle East's democratic revolts to the region and to the world. There was a feeling afoot that Qatar, due a further boost in global profile as host of the 2022 World Cup, was overdue a yank of its chain. And so Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Bahrain and Egypt severed all ties and encouraged similar action from others, including but not limited to Djibouti, Mauritania, Niger, Gabon, the Maldives and one of Libya's governments. Qatari flagships were banned from ports. Qatar Airways was forced into rambling routes around forbidden airspace, although this did provide passengers flying into Doha from Europe with glorious views of northern Iran. Trade routes were cut. Those laying siege to Qatar insisted upon the unplugging of Al Jazeera, a reduction of links with Tehran, and the closure of a Turkish military base in Qatar, among other concessions. Qatar, fortified by bottomless pits of oil and gas money, ignored these demands, and now everybody seems to have lost interest. As of last week's Gulf Cooperation Council summit in the Saudi city of Al Ula, the Gulf is once again cooperating.
The Al Ula Declaration has achieved a settlement of all issues outstanding in a way that is entirely satisfactory to all nations involved, to all the countries involved. We are extremely pleased with having been able to achieve this very important breakthrough that we believe will contribute very much to the stability and security of all our nations in the region. And yes, all the outstanding, whether it's the returning of diplomatic relations, flights, etc., all of that will now go back to normal.
The Qatar-Saudi land border crossings have reopened. Qatar Airways and Saudi Airlines have resumed services both ways. At embassies in Doha, Riyadh, Manama and Abu Dhabi, shutters are being raised, dust covers whisked from gilded furniture, new embossed business cards being ordered. In Al Ula, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was photographed embracing Qatari Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. So everybody's friends again, or at least pretending not to hate each other, which, where practical diplomacy is concerned, will do. As for why, it's possible that the Saudis just realised that the whole thing had been an absurd waste of time and energy and wasn't doing any good, and indeed was enriching their Iranian rivals by the estimated $100 million a month Qatar Airways was paying Tehran for overflight privileges, to say nothing of strengthening the ties between Qatar and Turkey, which Saudi Arabia had hoped to unravel. However, it is difficult to perceive this rapprochement and the imminent inauguration of a new US president as coincidence. Saudi Arabia is concerned that Joe Biden might take a less belligerent line on Iran than Donald Trump, that Biden might indeed attempt to revive the nuclear deal with Iran from which Trump flounced. Qatar never really liked Iran all that much anyway, but who does, and has a World Cup to organise, pandemic permitting, and so could do without this diplomatic migraine. And Saudi Arabia may perceive a greater need for solidifying its own bloc than continuing to wage a pointless vendetta. If only Riyadh would apply the same pragmatic cost-benefit analysis to its ongoing rampage in Yemen. That's when good neighbours become good friends. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Miller.